Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Well, Boris Johnson is in Dublin this morning for talks with the Taoiseach, and the opening remarks haven't really gone in his favour, James. Is that a surprise?
No, because part of Boris Johnson's problem is that European leaders look at him, see a man without anything near a parliamentary majority now, the whip having gone from those 21 Tory rebels, and so they are more prepared to point score and less inclined to compromise than they otherwise would be. And I also think that Leo Varadkar is obviously slightly playing a no-deal Brexit blame game. He's trying to say, look, don't think there's any simple way to deal with this. And his point about there being no such thing as a clean Brexit is, you know, trying to suggest that these arguments are going to have to go on for ages and ages and ages. I think the interesting question here is there is some movement from the UK government, and I think more interestingly from the DUP, on one bit of a kind of alternative to the backstop now, which is this idea of an all-Ireland SPS zone. The idea essentially is...
SPS being sanitary and phytosanitary.
Yeah. So essentially agricultural stuff. Basically, the argument goes like this, which even the DUP, and most DUP MPs would accept in private, which is, their argument goes like this, there is actually surprisingly few areas where there's an all-Ireland economy. In most areas of the economy, Northern Ireland is far more economically integrated with our UK than it is with the Republic. However, the exception to that is agriculture, which is genuinely does seem to be or genuinely is an all-Ireland area. So what Boris Johnson is essentially floating is that on agriculture, Northern Ireland would stay aligned with EU rules, even if that meant that it was not aligned with the rules in Great Britain. And this is kind of acceptable to the DUP because there are already some ways in which, you know, in terms of animal and plant health, the island of Ireland is treated as one unit and GB is treated as a different unit. And also there's that famous quote from Ian Paisley, which Boris Johnson has taken to using all the time, which is, you know, my constituents are British, but my cows are Irish. So you can see that. The Leo Varadkar view is, that's all well and good, but it only solves one bit of the backstop. Agriculture isn't the
it's only
full,
30%,
yeah,
isn't it?
Full, but this is where I think it is making more progress, where it has more merit to it than that line suggests. The checks on agriculture are the most invasive. They're the ones that have to be done closest to the border. If you were to combine those checks on agriculture with something like the Barnier de-dramatised checks on goods that he proposed when Theresa May was saying that she couldn't agree to a Northern Ireland-only backstop, you might begin to have something. I also think that there is a kind of realism point here, which is on terms of manufactured goods. It is hard to believe that large-scale reputable companies would involve in deliberately exporting goods that they knew were not allowed to be sold in one jurisdiction into that jurisdiction. So, you know, I think there are ways that you can begin to build on that. But in the current UK political situation, what incentive does Leo Varadkar have to compromise? I would say pretty much zilch. You know, and I think this is essentially the view, which is, let's just wait and see what happens here, because we could be about to have a UK general election that returns a parliament that has a majority for a second referendum, and then everything goes up in the air again. So I think that is where we are today.
So let's just look at that current UK political situation, Katie. Number 10 have been saying that the actions of the rebels and Amber Rudd over the past week have wrecked their negotiating position. Do you think that's true?
Well, I think there's a blame game. I think the reality is it is very hard to negotiate when your opponents, if you want to call them that, believe that there is an imminent general election, partly because Number 10 have been saying that, and secondly, that a law has been passed or will receive royal assent today to say that you have to delay Brexit and request an extension. I don't think that's what you could call holding all the cards in this negotiation on the Boris Johnson front. So it is much harder for Number 10 to do what they wanted. I don't think, to be honest, when they entered number 10 and Boris Johnson had a working majority of one after the Brecon and Radnorshire by-election. They really sensed that this was going to be plain sailing and all these rebels would row in behind them last week. But what has happened means that I think it is tricky to see how these negotiations are going to go in the way that they'd wanted. And when Boris Johnson met with European leaders, and I think people really latched on to a few optimistic comments there, when Angela Merkel said 30 days to come up with a solution, it feels like the deadline has shifted again. And I think this is something that repeatedly happened under Theresa May for different reasons. The fact that, for example, people would hold off on the Yvette Cooper rebel amendment to give her a couple of weeks, and then they thought they could get another vote on it. So you never really felt there was pressure up. I mean, the view in number 10 is the only way you're actually going to get to a solution and thrash something out is at the last minute. That doesn't work when the last minute never exists, when the idea that you're always going to get an extension. Now, there's some talk that Brussels could veto an extension. I still think there is an expectation that Brussels will probably grant one. So I think we are in this slightly circle, which is going round. In my head, I'm seeing like a helicopter which can't land, just waiting to know when we are going to actually be able to have this confrontation that has been brewing for months of years, which I think will be eventually when we get a general election.
There is a report that Boris Johnson could implement the will of the Benn Bill, which is to write to the EU and ask for an extension, while also writing another letter, very Boris Johnson, saying he doesn't want an extension. Is that going to fly?
Well, there's already a debate going on about whether that would be abiding by the bill, by the law, and if Boris Johnson would be breaking the law doing that. Now, the Telegraph report this and say that number 10 think that this is a way around it. You've seen, I think, Charlie Falconer suggests that this wouldn't be a way around it. I think what's interesting right now is that if you look about the fallout from Amber Rudd resigning at the weekend, at the moment, you have Nicky Morgan writing in the Daily Mail today, it does seem as though everyone is staying on board. But I think the next point of tension is going to be whether or not Boris Johnson is deemed to be breaking the law. We saw that at the weekend. You had Robert Buckland coming out and actually saying that he wasn't going to resign because he had a conversation with Boris Johnson about the importance of the law. Now, that sounds like a
strange situation.
Strange situation to be that. And so I think that he does understand the law, the Prime Minister. But you can start to see how I think that would be the next breaking point on this. And I think as for what number 10 are actually planning, I think tonight we are going to be getting another vote, we expect, on a general election. I think that there is an effort, don't think there's an expectation that will work, to try and point out to opposition parties and MPs that this could be your last chance to get a general election before, if you want to stop a no deal and let the public decide, because we are going to try some things that you don't expect. So I think there's a pressure element.
Yes, James, Dominic Cummings has reportedly told people that those who are cross with his tactics up to this point will melt when they discover what's going to happen in the next few weeks. Short of him moving the earth closer to the sun, what do you think he's got planned?
I think they are very keen to find some alternative to either requesting the extension or resigning. I mean, the problem with the plan outlined in the front of the Daily Telegraph is that, you know, as one senior cabinet minister said to me, in the current political circumstance, the EU is going to grant an extension however it is requested. Saturday's Times revealed the sheer extent of cooperation between these rebel MPs and the European Union. And I think what would be quite clear why the EU would grant that short extension is they would know that a general election is coming. So from the EU point of view, there's no particular harm in granting a short extension. See what the general election result is. If the general election is that Boris Johnson comes back for majority, you can say, right, the extension's running out, we're not giving you another one, so you've either got to do accept the deal we're offering or leave with no deal. If you came back with a parliament that was more Remain inclined, leaning towards a second referendum, you could say, take the time you need to have that vote. I think that is the issue. I think if it comes down to it, I think Boris Johnson would do much better to resign than to request the extension. Because I think that he has made it his thing that he is not going to request this extension. He'd rather die in a ditch than do it. And he's also said he wants the UK to leave the EU on October 31st, do or die. I think if he resigns, and look, I cannot take us out of the EU despite all my efforts because Parliament is blocking me, that, I think, would be something that voters would be more likely to understand, and they wouldn't view this as yet another broken promise on Brexit.
Now, Katie, most of the hostility in Westminster has been between the Tories and ex-Tory MPs who were kicked out of the party last week. But there's also a lot of aggravation towards another much less recently ex-Tory MP, Speaker John Bercow, who the Tories are now going to stand against, they're threatening, in his seat of Buckingham, which is not normally what happens with a Speaker. The other parties normally stand down.
Yes, I think this is another example of defying convention. But then again, I think you barely really look up from your cup of tea in the morning when you hear someone is doing that these days. The Tories plan to run a candidate against John Bercow. There has been some outrage about this move, but from people who like John Bercow, from opposition MPs. Ultimately, I think no matter what you think of John Bercow, it's very hard to argue that he is a neutral speaker. If you look at what happened in light of the bullying report, where it was said that you needed to remove certain people from senior positions to completely change the culture, you actually had Labour MPs, you had people like Margaret Beckett, basically say that the reason that they were going to keep John Bercow in place rather than go along with any attempts to move him was because the Brexit trumped some things. So there is this sense that he works in their favour. Will it hurt the Tories in any way standing a candidate against John Bercow? I think that if you look at the voters the Conservative Party are aiming at, they will all probably be fairly united in the sense that John Bercow has made it more difficult for them on Brexit, that John Bercow has caused them many problems. And I think it's just another sign of the direction the Conservative Party is going in. Because if you think about, I suppose, previous times, so 2010, 2015, if you think about Lib Dem Tory voters, now I think there might be some who would think, oh, that's a bit much, but ultimately there is everything we can tell from Number 10 so far and Boris Johnson's positioning is they are going for voters who voted to leave, and that is the first priority. And I think most voters who voted to leave and feel passionate about Brexit feel passionate perhaps about John Bercow, but in a negative way.
Thank you, Katie, and thank you, James. And you can listen to this podcast and all our other podcasts on the iTunes store, and please do send us your lovely feedback. Even if you don't quite know what our names are, our podcast email address is podcast@spectator.co.uk. Thanks for listening.